That program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Thanks, New Zealand On Air, for funding accessmedia.nz.
Good day, and everyone, and welcome to Capital Irish, the Irish-related programme that comes to you every Sunday on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM at high noon. Or you can listen to it anywhere in the world online on wellingtonaccessradio.org.nz. My name is Jim Friel, originally from County Mayo, and I am one of a number of Irish-born presenters from different age groups and different counties in Ireland who help to bring this programme to you. With me in the studio doing the important technical job is Ray Ferguson from County Cavan, who always does a good job. We are supported by our sponsors, the Wellington Irish Trust, Hutt Valley Irish Society, and Peter and Susie McGuinness. Today, I will bring you snippets of Irish-related news and play some songs or music. Recently, the news media in Ireland have been reporting some horror stories, unfortunately, of child abuse in the 1970s, especially in some of Ireland's most prestigious schools, such as Blackrock College in Dublin, where there have been 230 allegations made against the religious order that run the teaching there. Well, they used to run it. I think it's mostly lay teachers now. The order is the Spiritan Order, better known in our time as the Holy Ghost Fathers. The Garda Síochána are conducting an investigation into the allegations, so it's quite serious, following the RTE documentary into the affair. The Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, has described the allegations of abuse as sickening. The recent scandal, unfortunately, follows on from 149 allegations against 43 Jesuit priests, and that order had to pay out 7.4 million euros in compensation to 78 people. Now, some of Ireland's most well-known business tycoons and politicians were educated in those colleges over the past 100 years. Writers like Fintan O'Toole say that the abuse is nothing new and that it has been covered up for years. Sad to hear. It's always sad to read about such things, but it's important that there are brave whistleblowers that, even though they take a long time, are exposing this abuse. And it's not just in Ireland. We've had the same here recently in an Anglican prestigious college in Auckland, Dilworth College, and where there's also been allegations. In fact, there have been convictions of child abuse. Anyway, do you know who Turtle Bunbury is? Well, he is an Irish author, historian, and tea presenter, and he lives in County Carlow. He has written such books as The Vanishing Irish, Easter Dawn, and many more. Recently, the Irish Central newspaper had a review of one of his recent books, and it's called The Irish Diaspora. The book is interesting. It recounts that since St. Brendan's first voyages in the early 6th century, an estimated 10 million people have left Ireland for other countries, and that 80 million people worldwide claim Irish descent. And 1 million Irish-born people live abroad right now. In the centuries after the fall of the Roman Empire, Irish missionaries carried the word of God, Christianity, throughout Europe. And 4.6 million Canadians, that's more than 15% of the population, claim Irish descent, according to the book. The first ever radio spoken words were transmitted across the Atlantic from Ballybunion in County Kerry. I didn't know that. The sixth president of Israel, Chaim Herzog, was the son of the chief rabbi of Dublin, or Ireland. During Oliver Cromwell's reign, 6,000 to 10,000 men and women, according to the book, were rounded up and sent to Barbados as indentured slaves. Among them were the Irish ancestors of singer-songwriter Rihanna. There are many more interesting snippets in Bunbury's book. Could be worth a read. After that, it's time for a song, and as Christmas is coming home, Going Home, sung here by Celtic Woman. Hope you like it. About the 10,000 odd people that Cromwell sent to Barbados as indentured slaves. Well, one of them was a woman known as Goody Ann Glover, who eventually found her way to Boston in America. Unfortunately for her, she was hanged in Boston in 1688. Guess for what? Over claims that she was a witch. She was the last woman to be hanged in Boston as a witch. Now, she was a widow with a daughter. Her Irish husband had died in Barbados, and she worked as a housekeeper for a wealthy family looking after five children in Boston. Now, after some of the children became ill, she was accused of witchcraft and guess what? Sentenced to death. Now, it took 300 years later, the Boston City Council declared her conviction had been unjust and declared November the 16th, Goody Glover Day, in honour of this Irish immigrant. I read that little snippet in the Irish Central. Did you also know that during the 17th century, more than 50,000 women in Europe were sentenced to death as witches? There were hundreds hanged in America. I don't know exactly, but enough. And indeed, witch hunts were very, very common all over the world. We recently watched an interesting movie, well, on Netflix. It's called The Wonder. I'm sure many of you will have seen it. And it's based on one of Dublin-born writer Emma Donoghue's books. This story, it's set in rural Ireland in 1862, 10 years after the Great Hunger. The story is about a young 11-year-old girl who has not eaten for over a month, but still looks healthy and hearty. Now, the local mail authorities bring an English nurse in to check on her for 2 weeks and report to the authorities. Tourists and pilgrims keep arriving in the village to view this mystery girl. She is either a miracle girl or a hoax. Well, the film, I won't tell you how it finishes. The film has a great cast. Florence Hughes, she is just brilliant as the English nurse. Kieran Hines is a great Irish actor, and he plays the parish priest to perfection. Toby Jones is the local doctor, and I think he does a great job. This movie, it's worth a watch. It's, as I said, it's on Netflix. I recently read another book by the same writer. That's Emma Donoghue. I got it in the library, actually. And the book is called The Pull of the Stars. And it's set in a Dublin hospital during the great flu, influenza, in 1918, which killed far more people than the Great War. In fact, 6%, would you believe, of the world's population died of that great flu. Well, the novel is fictional, but it's based on historical facts. But the one non-fictional character in the book is Kathleen Lynn, an amazing woman. She was born in Killala in County Mayo into a wealthy Protestant family, but she dedicated her life to help poor families. She was in James Connolly's Citizen Army in the GPO in 1916, and she was arrested afterwards and spent some time in jail. She was also in the suffragette movement. She was elected as a Sinn Féin TD in 1923. She was also a doctor. Not many women were doctors then. And she founded St. Alton's Children's Hospital in Dublin that helped lower the infant mortality rate in Ireland. She died in 1955 at the age of 81. She was the inspiration for Emma Donoghue's book. Just in passing, she was also a gay woman, so she was ahead of her time in many ways. Time for a song. As Christmas is not far away, I will play Celtic Woman's version of Holy Night. I hope you like it. December the 6th, that was last Tuesday, was the anniversary of the signing of the Irish Treaty 100 years ago. It was signed after months of tough negotiations in London. The main figures on the Irish side were Michael Collins, Arthur Griffith, Erskine Childers, George Gavin Smith and Robert Barton. The main figures on the other side, the Sudbury side, were Lord George, Prime Minister at the time, Winston Churchill, Lord Birkenhead, who was known as F.E. Smith, and Austen Chamberlain. The mystery of why the leader of Irish republicanism at the time, Eamon de Valera's era, refusal to participate in the negotiations still baffles Irish historians and writers. as he was by far the most experienced negotiator of all of them and would have been a better match for Lord George and Churchill. Writing afterwards, Michael Collins, who really didn't want to be there but was sort of forced by De Valera, Michael Collins' opinion of Lord George was not good. He found him to be an obnoxious man, and his opinion of Churchill wasn't much better. He thought he was an unprincipled guy, willing to take action for political gain. Well, nothing happens. He'd fit right in today's world. And the only one on the British side that Michael Collins had respect for was Lord Birkenhead, even though Birkenhead was a staunch unionist. Collins said that he was an honest and honourable man. And after the treaty was signed, he said to Michael Collins, "I fear that I may have signed my political death warrant." And Michael Collins replied, "I feel I may have signed my actual death warrant," which was prophetic, as Collins was killed in an ambush in his own home county, Cork, 8 months later during the Civil War. Eamon de Valera and his followers had refused to accept the verdict of the Dáil when the Dáil approved by a narrow majority, 57-64, the treaty. Then a general election followed in June 16th, and the pro-treaty party, led by Collins, won 58 seats, and the anti-party got 36 seats. A clear majority for Collins and his pro-treaty party. And De Valera acted a bit like Donald Trump, refusing to accept the people's verdict and refusing to sit in the Dáil. The result, civil war. It tore the country apart and left a bitterness that lasted until recent times. The fact that pro-treaty parties, there was other small parties as well, between them won 75% of the vote, and the anti-treaty party parties 48% of the votes, means that De Valera, more than anyone, was responsible for the Irish Civil War. That's the view, just not of me, the view of many historians, including Tim Pat Coogan, who has written biographies of De Valera and Michael Collins. But that's life. 10 years later, 1932, De Valera and his new party, Fianna Fáil, would be elected to power in Ireland and dominate Irish politics through my childhood and for decades. December the 6th was also the anniversary of the illegal execution of four of the leading figures of the anti-treaty party in 1922. The four were part of the four-court executive who had seized the four courts in Dublin, which was the beginning of the Irish Civil War that was to last 10 to 11 months, with the death of many more than had died during the War of Independence, which lasted for close to 3 years. The four who were executed in December 1922 were Rory O'Connor, Liam Meadows, Joe McKelvey and Dick Barrett. They had been in Mountjoy Jail for 6 months after surrendering from the four courts, and they were executed in response to the killing of a pro-treaty TD, Sean Hales, who was a good friend of theirs a year or so before that. Because 1 year earlier, the four were executed without any trial. A few weeks ago, a Supreme Court judge in Dublin, Gerard Hogan, said in a statement that the execution of the four was completely illegal. The government at the time, he said, believed that the state was in danger. The Irish Times said recently that, which is interesting, from 1916 until 1921, when the treaty was signed and the British Army departed Ireland, the British executed 40 people, and that was over a five-year period. But in less than 1 year, from 1922 until the end of the Civil War in 1923, the new Irish government executed 77 men for political reasons and four for criminal offences. That's twice as many as the British had executed. It's only in very recent times that Ireland has finally began to talk about the tragedy of the Civil War that split families and villages and towns. It has taken 100 years to finally admit at state level, that is, the wrongs done by both sides during that terrible time in our history. Well, after that, it's time for me to go. And we will go out with the Chieftains, a tune that I quite like, and it's called Friel's Kitchen. Fare thee well.
You've been listening to Capital Irish on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM thanks to the generosity of our sponsors. We couldn't be here without them. Our sponsors are Wellington Irish Trust, Susie and Peter McGuinness, and the Hutt Valley Irish Society. A very big thank you from all of us on the Capital Irish team. You've been listening to Capital Irish on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM thanks to the generosity of our sponsors. We couldn't be here without them. Our sponsors are Wellington Irish Trust, Susie and Peter McGuinness, and the Hutt Valley Irish Society. A very big thank you from all of us on the Capital Irish team.